This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We begin hour number three of Sharp Money. Joe Cirillo, Dave Ross here at the D in fabulous downtown Las Vegas, Nevada. Joe, a lot of fun coming up in this hour. At the end of the show, we've been charged by Wyatt Tomczyk, our star producer, to give our top five movies of all time. Now, look, we're a little bit different in age. People don't know this. I'm 10 years younger than Joe. So our movies might be a little bit different and skewed.
Dave, why is your nose like going all the way across the room here?
You can't see the gray hair with a headset.
He's
10
years younger, and he's already got that salt and pepper thing I've been dying for two decades now.
A lot of stress betting the Mets all my life.
Yeah. So, you know, Dave, the list that they've been doing, these lists with Joe, and he tasked me on July 4th to do them. So I'm like, all right, we did top five barbecue items for 4th of July. Last week, I think you would have enjoyed it. I tapped into his Italian heritage.
Yes.
Top five Italian dishes.
Oh, yeah, you don't know it, but
we revised that.
Yep. Brought that up on Tuesday, brought that back to life.
Oh, dude, okay.
We did a whole segment show of just, because I hadn't run through the list again. We had already been there, done that. But we did a whole segment of revealing it to Dave and getting his take on it. So yeah, Tuesday, we relived that Cirillo top five.
I just wanted some chicken piccata. That's all. Just a little piccata would have been nice.
But you take the capers off.
I do take the capers off.
That's chicken franchise. That's not chicken piccata if you take the capers off.
I'm surprised that carbonara wasn't on there.
Carbonara, I mean, it's hard. Really it's good. A great dish.
Tough omission. Top five lists are supposed to have difficult omissions.
And that's what's going to happen with the movies, too. We talked about that. Like, no honorable mentions, no asterisk. Oh, I had two for number five. No. It's a top five list. It's tough cuts.
I am shocked, though. I think, and I don't know Dave's list. Dave doesn't know mine, but we asked Wyatt just to see. I don't think we agree on any in the top five. I thought there'd be two or three agreements in there. This is going to be fun.
We're not going to give away any spoilers, but I think you might be accurate with that.
Real quick, Dave. Yeah. When you saw pesto sauce, did you have to ask, like, are you putting it on something? Or are you just eating it straight out of the...
It always goes on pasta.
When Joe's making his own pesto sauce.
Yeah.
Like, I can't do that. No. I'm a paisan. I can't do that. I have no.
Trust me. If you have a blender, you can do it. It's not that I don't do the, you know, the mortar and pestle thing. Like, if you have a blender, you can make a pesto sauce. It's just a matter of getting the right ingredients. The reason I think people think it's difficult to make a good one.
Yeah.
So many restaurants load heavy cream in theirs.
Yeah.
And that destroys it. The only sort of dairy that should be in there is Pecorino Romano. No heavy cream.
See, when Joe starts speaking with the hands, that's right. He's about ready to cook.
It's not an Alfredo sauce, by the way, not really that Italian. It's Italian-American Alfredo sauce, but it's not an Alfredo sauce. Keep the heavy cream for yourself.
By the way, the Alfredo sauce is too heavy.
Way too heavy.
That's why I want the pesto.
I don't know if you've seen, there's this, it pops up on my Instagram, but this person goes to Italy and just finds a way to just...
Salt, I realize,
yeah. And he's sitting there cutting
spaghetti.
Oh, my God. Why are we doing that to the Italians?
You know what we call him? A real strunza.
I don't know what that means, but I think I know what it means.
Yeah.
Let's get to the NFL here. We've been talking about odds in Major League Baseball here throughout the program. Keeping with that theme in the AFC, I understand why the Chiefs are the betting favorites. And again, in the Super Bowl era, America... No team has ever gone back to back to back. And I think I pointed this out, but right after Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs won that throw in overtime against San Francisco, the paint wasn't dry for about 15 seconds. And in the celebration, Patrick Mahomes said to Chris Jones, "You're not going anywhere because we're going for a three-peat." So to say that it's not on their mind is lying. It is absolutely on their mind. So, you know, the road they went through last year, I think by the numbers, was the most difficult road to winning the Super Bowl, going on the road the way they did in the semifinal game, certainly the championship game, and then winning the overtime game against the 49ers, the opponents, the records, the whole bit. So they'd prefer to have it all go through Arrowhead at plus 350 as the number one seed. Ravens, I had a ticket at plus 1250 last year to be the number one seed and get to the Super Bowl, win the AFC. Came up a little bit short. Did have a hedge. It was actually a middle. There was an opportunity. There was an opportunity for a middle. Didn't hit it. But again, that's what you're looking for here when you play some of these longer shots. 5-1. It was 1250 a year ago. Bengals, Joey B is back, plus 650. And then, you know, the Texans, you look at their schedule, their division. I can understand why they're 8-1 along with the Bills. And then there's Aaron at plus 850. Everybody else on the right side of your screen is 10-1 or beyond. Joe, do you see any playable numbers that you might like in the AFC?
You know, it's difficult to look for a repeat in a bet like this, but the Ravens at 5-1 are probably the most playable. Mm. The AFC's up for grabs, right? And I mean, once you get to the postseason, it's hard to go against Kansas City. Yeah. I love this Chiefs team. People love to hate them, you know, because that's what happens anytime a team starts to have success. But to me, the way in which they're having success year in and year out is so much fun, and it's so easy to root for. I mean, how do you not love Andy Reid? I love Spags, and maybe it's the Giants fan in me. I've gotten to interview Spags a couple times. Like, I just think he's a salt of the earth great guy.
He's still underrated as a defensive coordinator, which is amazing to me.
He's, I think, a Hall of Famer as a coordinator. Did nothing as a head coach, but he is a Hall of Fame coordinator who I firmly believe belongs in Canton. But the Chiefs always have those regular season throwaway games. Mm-hmm. I think the Ravens are less prone to losing a game that they should win than Kansas City. I also think week one, this could be decided. Like, that could be a tiebreaker scenario right there, week one, when the Chiefs and Ravens kick the season off in Arrowhead. You know, I love Houston. Everyone who watches the show knows that I love Houston. They have a much tougher schedule, and while I don't think that'll stop them from winning the division, I think it stops them from potentially getting the one seed. I don't think anyone in the AFC East is one seed worthy, and I'm just more skeptical. I'm not out on the Bengals, but I'm skeptical. I'm hesitant. Because so much of that has to do with Joe Burrow and his health. And obviously, that goes for any quarterback and any team. And we've seen Lamar Jackson have health concerns. But I'm much more confident in the Ravens than I am the Bengals. So, plus 350 is not that playable to me. 5-1 is playable to me. And I think it just comes down to those two teams. Kansas City, we talk about, they have the regular season letdowns. They're built for playoff success.
Yep.
But looking at their schedule, there's a couple tough ones, you know. They've got Cincinnati and Baltimore early. Then they have to go to San Francisco. After that, it lightens up. So if this is the year Kansas City doesn't lose a game that they are supposed to win, then this would be a year for them to maybe go 14-3, get the one seed. But I still like the Ravens to repeat.
By the way, that game one, the opener on that Thursday night in Kansas City, Ravens, you still find plus threes out there. They are plus $1.30 to win that game. But that's interesting because...
Can you get me 3.5 anywhere?
I haven't seen any hooks. Hooks have been gone. But I'll tell you this, though, Joe. To your point about playing a similar bet with a better number, playing your 5-1 for the Ravens to have the number one seed in the AFC is incumbent, we would think, upon them beating Kansas City in week one.
Right.
So instead of playing the $1.30 on the money line, you can play that 5-1. Now, look, I get it. Their division with Joey Burrow back. I actually like the Steelers this year. I know some people on the network are down on the Steelers.
You and me both, but not for a one seed.
No. But like that,
over 8.5 wins, I like.
Yes, and that the division could be really tough, so maybe it cannibalizes itself a little bit, which could hurt the Ravens' chances of getting that number one seed.
So
but
I assume 3-3 in that division. I think the Ravens can go 3-3 in division and still get the one seed.
Let me ask you this. If the Chiefs had a down year, and I'm not saying they are, could the Chargers be in play at 20-1? It's year one for Harbs. I'm very excited about what he looks like this year, what he does with Justin Herbert. They're going to dummy down that offense. They're going to run the football more. He's going to play in the trenches. He's going to be, you know, punting is not a dirty word and kicking is not a dirty word. I know it was with Brandon Staley. Could that be in play at 20-1?
No shot for me.
Woo.
No shot. I think the Chargers are more likely to finish in third place than to have the one seed.
Whoa. Who's beating them in that division? If it's is it the Raiders or the Broncos?
We should have had you on for a segment. Maybe we'll do it when I'm back with Samich tomorrow, because Samich and I were in lockstep with this. The Raiders, I think, outside of the quarterback position, are a more complete team than the Chargers.
Whoa. Wait, who's playing quarterback for the... Is Jim Plunkett playing quarterback for the Raiders this year? I mean,
outside of the quarterback position, I think that they're the more complete team. And I think if they go, if they stop with the Aiden O'Connell experiment and go with Minshew, that the Raiders can win 8-9 games. And
wow.
I could see the Chargers cashing in 7 or 8 wins this year.
Well,
I'm not high. I think the Chargers' numbers are all inflated because of Justin Herbert and Jim Harbaugh, and that the rest of that roster is in shambles.
Well, I think if you remember with the Chargers, they really don't have any explosive, like, skill players.
Well, they got rid of them.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, Mike Williams is gone. Keenan Allen's gone.
They've got guys that can be explosive for a play here and a play there. But
Austin Eckler's gone.
Right.
They decided to go away with the old guard, and that's why they went Joe Alt, you know, first number 5 pick overall. They're like, you saw, and Harbaugh said it on day one of his introductory press conference, it's about the offensive line. Like, if they don't win in the trenches, they don't win.
Bingo.
So that's they're going to have to hope that that offensive line is much better than it was. And it got Justin Herbert killed last year. He was playing with a flak jacket before he got knocked out. Then they had to go to, what, Easton Stick the rest of the year. That is not a recipe for success.
I like their tackles. Ault's obviously a rookie. You can't anoint him anything. He looks like one of those, you know, quote-unquote sure thing, can't-miss prospects. And I love his game. But, you know, there might be an acclimation period. Mm-hmm. I love Slater on the left side. Slater a little better at run blocking. Well,
coming off
production.
A significant injury, too, a year ago. So we're hoping he's back to his old form. Right.
Inside of the O-line has some question marks. And when your number one back on the depth chart is currently Gus Edwards, who I love. I was all aboard the Gus bus last year, right? I was taking Gus Edwards touchdown props almost every single week because I think he had 11 on the season. If he's the number one guy on your depth chart, you got some issues in the run game. He's a great situational back, a great power back, goal line, third and short, fourth and short. Mm-hmm. He's not an every down back. He shouldn't be number one. And then J.K. Dobbins, the other guy, fragile. You know, I mean, J.K. Dobbins is always just, you know, a second away from being out for the year.
It's true.
Real quick, so the on ESPN, the depth chart for the Chargers, they're the top three wide receivers, Joshua Palmer, mm-hmm. Quentin Johnson really struggled last year, Ladd McConkey. I think he's going to be a good player, but obviously that I don't know
that's in the slot,
if he's going to be the number one guy. You got DJ Chark, Brendan Rice, so it's
Brendan
a lot
Rice.
Of... And it's Michigan legend Cornelius Johnson. I'm going to throw him out there.
Love but it's going to be a lot of running the football. That's what that tells you, right? That they de-emphasize the wide receiver
You have
position.
Justin Herbert to run the football. I mean, like, well, I don't love the – I don't
see,
like,
I like that.
That was J.J. McCarthy with Michigan.
Yes, I like that stuff. That's what Jim Harbaugh's going to do.
But unlike J.J. McCarthy, Justin Herbert's good.
Whoa. J.J. McCarthy was undefeated against Penn State. I'm just saying.
All right, well, yeah. I mean, congrats. He was better than Drew Aller. It's like being the tallest little person.
We got a Michigan man sticking up for J.J. McCarthy.
Hey, J.J. McCarthy will prove everyone wrong, or I'm going to end up on Freezing Cold Takes. One of the two.
Well, there you go.
Sam Darnold will be starting week one in Minnesota. By the way, we're going to talk about the NFC when you come back here. Look at some number one seeds potentially out there as well. Come on back. Sharp Money here on Visa.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Get ready to win big this NFL season with a VSIN Pro subscription. You sign up now for our football special before the end of July. Get full VSIN Pro access from now through the Super Bowl for an early bird discount of just $175. That saves you nearly 50% off the monthly price. With VSIN Pro, you're going to gain access to our daily best bets, exclusive betting splits data, proven betting systems, and analysis from professional handicappers, 24/7 video content, and our all-new special edition betting guides. Our new NFL betting guide is packed with detailed team, division, conference analysis, plus season win totals, futures, props, and awards best bets. Our expert insights and in-depth coverage will keep you informed and help you make smarter bets throughout the entire season, so do not wait. Sign up now before the end of July. Get full Visa Pro access through the Super Bowl for an early bird discount of just $175. Sign up now at VSIN.com/subscribe. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. Back alongside Joe Serrallo, Dave Ross here as we continue this edition of Sharp Money. Aaron Halterman is going to join us in the next segment. We're going to talk a lot about the Big 12, but I do want to get back to the NFL conversation, Joe, that you and I were having. Because, you know, why I brought something up here? He said, you know, Minnesota, J.J. McCarthy, eventually he's going to be proven right with that high draft pick by Minnesota, traded up one to get him. I think Sam Darnold's going to get the start there in Minnesota to begin the year. And I am big on the Minnesota Vikings this year. I've played the alt win total over 7.5 plus $1.55. That's not based on J.J. McCarthy, America.
Wow.
That's based on Sam Darnold being reviving his career, kind of like we saw Baker Mayfield revive his last year when he went down to Tampa. Am I crazy for that play of Minnesota? And look, I think J.J. is going to play if Sam doesn't play well, Wyatt. But this is an in Kevin O'Connell I trust bet.
Well, let's see. I think the good thing for J.J. is in a spot where he doesn't have the pressure of starting right away. Nope. He can sponge up as much stuff as he can. It's not just being thrown into the fire, but I do expect him to be starting at some point this year. I don't know.
But what if the Vikings are a wild card potential team down the stretch? You think they make the change to make the change?
If you're winning, the only reason you make a change,
is
Justin Jefferson comes up to, hey, look, I feel a better connection with JJ compared to Sam Darnold. So we'll see. I mean, you know, give credit to Kevin O'Connell last year. I mean, the Vikings went, what was it, 7-10? But
with no quarterbacks.
You look at it. I mean,
once Kirk went out,
they had four or five. It was like the Browns. I mean, they were
Jaren
rotating.
Hall was getting run. Yeah. Joshua Dobbs off the street.
If they don't steal one, and by the way, Dave, I agree with you that Sam Darnold could have maybe a little bit of a resurrection here.
If he doesn't see ghosts.
Yeah, as long as he doesn't. Wow, resurrections and seeing ghosts. We're getting really a little really morbid
deep.
On this
yeah,
one.
Yeah, exactly.
I think Kevin O'Connell's the guy to bring it out in him, though, to bring the best out in him. I've said about Kevin O'Connell, I don't think he's a good head coach. I think he's a great offensive mind, though. The problem is, if the Vikings don't steal one from the Giants week one, they could be staring 0-9
after
10 weeks. Look at that schedule. They have an early bye. They could be 0-5 into the bye. And then they come out with the Lions, Rams, Colts, Jaguars. Like, through 10 weeks, the Vikings, if they don't beat the Giants week one, they could legitimately be 0-9.
Which is basically a toss-up right now in the Meadowlands there, seeing the Giants maybe a point favorite here. But I'm with you.
That's why I like their under 5.5.
Week one, you like the alt under?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I can understand why. And again, if that happens and they go through that doomsday schedule, then you will see J.J. McCarthy at some point sooner rather than later.
So, Dave, you mentioned Baker Mayfield last year. I think the difference with Baker compared to Darnold is Baker got signed. He was like, you're the starter. There's nobody really – was there anybody behind?
In Tampa Bay?
They were thinking Kyle Trask maybe would get some run.
I don't think anyone's thought twice about Kyle Trask. Well, I mean,
in the post-Brady era, they're like, all right, let's give some of these young guys – they did not think he was going to be Baker Mayfield.
I think it's a little different with Darnold now. Is like, okay, we've got a guy behind me that they spent a top 10 pick on.
Sure.
They think he's the future. I think it adds a little bit more pressure to Darnold compared to Baker, where Baker was like, look, I can go out there and be me.
And Baker got a new deal out of it. I mean, I know it's about...
He got paid.
Yeah,
good for him.
$30 million to stay down there in Tampa. So I think that Sam Darnold looks at this as this is Skid Row in the NFL for starting quarterbacks. This is the last chance for him, or else they're going to send his stuff packing like they did in Rocky.
I will say with Darnold, you do have the best receiver in the NFL.
Yeah.
And TJ Hockenson, I don't know if
Jordan Addison's nothing to scoff at either.
They've got weapons, and then you get Aaron Jones now to run the football this year.
Don't remind me. I mean, I feel like their defense is just still no good. I worry about them in the trenches, and the schedule just being a gauntlet for the first 10, 11 weeks. I mean, Sam Darnold could actually play well and could be 1-8. And then at that point, do they look at his personal stats or do they look at the record and say, all right, let's throw JJ in there? Because if you look at his stats, you might stick with Darnold. If you look at the team's record, it might be JJ time too early.
And it'll also be a key win to get Hockenson back. He did have that 20 ACL.
Yep.
So if they can get him back, I mean, you've got...
Oh, they have weapons.
They've got good weapons.
Are they going to want JJ for that Bears game? They don't play the Bears once until week 12. They have two late games with the Bears in a span of 4 weeks. Are they going to want the JJ Caleb thing for both of those games?
Could you imagine if that came down to the Roy, if JJ played really well, all of a sudden they're like, hey, he might win Rookie of the Year. It is going to be incumbent upon playing time because Caleb, we know, is going to be the day one guy. He is the day one guy in Chicago, barring injury. So again, that's going to be interesting. Maybe you look to an alt win total over if they have a brutal start to that schedule. It does get a little bit easier in the second half for Minnesota. They are not on the short list here to be the number one seed in the NFC. We can understand why the teams that are up there are up there. Of course, the Niners are going to be the favorites to do just that. The Eagles are going to be nipping at their heels. We know about the Lions. And my Cowboys, not just mine, but America's team. They come into play there. And then the Falcons now, when you add a Kirk Cousins, they're plus 750. The Packers are very interesting to me because I was all over them last year. This year, they're 9-1 to have the number one seed in the NFC. The division is going to be, we believe, if Minnesota is good as the potential number four seed, the whole division is going to be rather cumbersome here to try to navigate. So I'm just wondering where we find value here. Is there value in the Niners as the short shot at 3-1 to not just win the division, but have the number one overall seed?
I don't think there's a lot of value there on a number like that. Similarly to Kansas City, I mean, I actually like the Chiefs plus 350 more, even though I'm picking the Ravens. I like the Chiefs more than the Niners in this situation. For me, if you go down a little bit, you know, the Eagles have question marks. The defense last year was dreadful late in that collapse. Like, you know, which Nick Sirianni are you getting, right? We talk about players carrying over. Is Sirianni going to be dialed in and focused like he was two years ago? Mm. Even though they started 10-1 last year, I don't think Sirianni was that dialed in. He was flipping off Chiefs fans when they were, you know, they were still winning games, but they were winning ugly. And some people hate that phrase. Some people say all that matters is the final result. No. You can kind of forecast a team's future depending on if they're winning pretty or winning ugly.
Sure.
The Niners were winning pretty last year. Just see that Cowboys-Niners game on Sunday Night Football.
I have that one stricken from the memory.
Yeah, it's the Cowboys were, what were they, the 2 seed? Right? They were the 2 seed, and that game was like a blowout between the Niners and the Cowboys. So there's definitely something to be said about how you win. I was genuinely asking if they were the two seed or the three seed.
That was the Sunday night game.
Oh, yeah.
Dak did not play well. But by the way, Dak Prescott did say before last year, I will not throw 10 picks. He only had 9 picks. So the Niners, I think they had like 8 of them.
Oh, Prescott had a great year. I just saw a quote earlier today. Charles Haley, Cowboy legend for many things.
Yes.
Just said that it's time to move on and trade Dak.
Oh, boy. So that's going well in Dallas.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and look, I would not play the Cowboys here at 7-1 to have the number one seed in the NFC. They're not even the favorites, obviously, to win the division. The Eagles are about an even money pick here to win the NFC. I've made this point many, many times.
I worry about them too.
By the Eagles?
Yeah.
I like the upgrade in coordinators. I like Vic Fangio.
Fangio's huge.
Yeah, I think as the defensive coordinator, you have a legit adult in the room now. And again, he's not going to be a player's coach where he's like, all right, guys, he's going to be, hey, do your job. I do my job. You do your job. So he's in no kid gloves with that defense this year. And by the way, if Nick Sirianni does act like he acted like for the majority last year, they've got two guys I think that people think are ready to be head coaches. Vic Fangio has been a head coach.
Imagine.
And Kellen Moore, I was not a huge fan at the end of his Dallas days. He did a great job early on in his OC days in Dallas. But they moved on from him in Dallas, and Mike McCarthy and Dak Prescott had the best year together. Without Kellen Moore, disaster last year in L.A. with the Chargers, but I think Kellen will be better in Philadelphia because of the failures he just had in Dallas and most recently in L.A. If that doesn't check you, then nothing will. So I actually think it's an upgrade for the coordinators for Philadelphia, and that's why I understand why they're the odds-on favorite, or at least even money, to win the East this year, and I don't disagree with that logic.
Yeah, I mean, I think them winning the division is safer than, even though the value, it's not as juicy, I think it's safer than them to get the 1 seed. Because Jalen Hurts, you know, in addition, I spent that whole time talking about Sirianni's issues. Jalen Hurts had turnover issues.
He did.
And I like Hurts, and I think he rights that ship. But not enough to say, like, oh, yeah, I'm going to take that. I think Detroit at 6-1 is probably my favorite play on this board. The problem is their division could be really tough this year.
Yeah.
I'm not as high on most, as most when it comes to Chicago. I don't think the Bears, they're over under set at 8.5. I think 8 wins would be a really good year for the Bears. I don't think that there are 9, 10 wins. Some people are saying wild card. I don't think that they're a playoff team. And Minnesota, unlike you, who you like the over 7.5, I like the alt under 5.5. I think Minnesota's a dumpster fire. So I could see Detroit going out there. There's a path to see the Lions start this year 7-0. I could see Detroit being very live for the 1 seed at 6-1.
I'll be fascinated about that Rams ticket there, 15-1, what Matthew Stafford looks like with the offseason he's had that have nothing to do with football. Aaron Halterman's going to join the program next. We're talking all things Big 12. Come on back. It's Sharp Money on Visa.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Back here on Sharp Money, Dave Ross, Joe Serralo coming at you from the D in fabulous downtown Las Vegas. What a pleasure to welcome back to the program. Aaron Halterman does a great job at RacingDudes.com. Follow him on X at Racing_Dudes. Joins us now on the Progressive Guest Line to talk all things Big 12. Aaron, we were kind of kidding during the break. It's every time you look at these new super divisions, right? You try to figure out, okay, wait, what team is in what division now and what conference here? And then you look and you see Utah as a new addition, and Cam Rising is still there here, Aaron. They have the highest win total along with K-State at 9.5. Walking into the Big 12, do you think that that number is appropriately set? It's actually juiced to the over at -$1.35.
Yeah, I mean, let's kick it off right here with the newcomers to the league, right? And this is the big newcomer, in my opinion, to the league this year, them in Arizona. Utah over 9.5. That's one of my stronger plays, actually, in the Big 12 this season. And look, you said it, Cam Rising for the 7th season. Here he comes back once again. And look, guys, I really think you look at the Utah team 2 years ago when Cam Rising was healthy, wow, they were a really good football team, especially towards the end of the season when he really got his feet under him. They looked fantastic. They beat up on USC in the Pac-12 championship game that year. Now, fast forward to last year, they were a disaster offensively without him. It was a rotation at quarterback, and neither one of them were very good. But you get Cam Rising back. You've got nine back on the defensive side of the ball, nine guys that were very good last season. The record wasn't great, but that defense was great last season. You know Whittingham's always going to have a really physical team there in Utah. And I think, you know, with Oklahoma, Texas gone and the teams that are left in the Big 12 and the teams that have come in, Utah might be the most physical team in this conference now. Yeah. They may be able to bully some teams around now. I really like the Utah team this year.
Yeah, Aaron, I love that handicap of Utah. Bizarre, Cam Rising. I'm 11 months older than him, and I graduated college over 4 years ago, and he's still out there. Just a rising senior, some might say. I want to stick with the theme of Pac-12 turned Big 12 teams and look at the Arizona Wildcats because, man, they've got something special with quarterback Noah Fifita and then McMillan, the receiver, one of the best air attacks in college football. And I'm kind of surprised that their win total after rattling off 10 a year ago is just 8 on DraftKings, 7.5 some places. I'm intrigued by this number of 8 plus money with the over. What do you think about Arizona's inaugural Big 12 campaign?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with how you broke it down there. I think 7.5 or 8 wins, that's pretty crazy for Arizona. Now, they're kind of the opposite of Utah. They're not going to ground and pound you, but man, they, like you said, they are electric offensively. They've got 7 guys back offensively, plus the quarterback that you mentioned, and he is fantastic. They've also returned 7 on defense. I know they've lost the head coach, but I think the replacement's going to be okay. I think they're just going to pick up right where they left off last year. So I'm going over Arizona 7.5 here. Also, you kind of look at some of their tougher games. Yeah, they do have tough games on the road at K-State, at Utah, at Central Florida, and at TCU. But all of their home games, guys, are very winnable. So if they've got 7 games at home, they should win all 7 of them. Mm. And we're talking about winning one of those games that I listed off on the road. They also have BYU mentioned. I forgot to mention about them on the road. You got to win one out of those 5 to get to this win total. Guys, I think they might win 2 or 3 out of those 5 that I just mentioned. So I think this was a no-brainer for me. Arizona over 7.5. I think they'll fit fine in the Big 12. Offensively, they're pretty similar to what everybody else does in the Big 12. So I think it's going to be a real good fit for the Wildcats.
Aaron, you mentioned that Utah might be the most physical defensive football team that they have in the conference this year. That normally goes to Mike Gundy in Oklahoma State with his defense. He raised some eyebrows with some of his comments at Big 12 Media Days. Their win total is sitting at 8. What do you make of Gundy, this team? Because I think some people, it feels like a wide variance that it could really be a disaster or they might be really, really good.
It's a grab bag. I stayed away from it as far as betting, but mm-hmm. I can speak on Mike Gundy a lot. I told you guys right before we got on air, I'm a big Oklahoma Sooner fan. With that being said, I know a lot about what goes on in Stillwater at Oklahoma State. Mike Gundy has said this kind of stuff for years, maybe not this extreme with the whole driving drunk comment. That was pretty crazy.
That was an eyebrow raiser right there.
Yeah, I mean, there's the I'm a man, I'm 40 thing, which was funny. And then there's the DWI thing, which is like, yeah, that's not that funny, dude. But anyway, he's a weird guy. That's the best way I can. He's just eccentric. He always has been. He does not care what he says ever. And that's evident. Their teams, I guarantee you, they will beat somebody they shouldn't, and then they will lose to somebody they shouldn't. And that's why it's kind of always hard to gauge what they're going to do from a win total perspective. If I had to take it, I would take them over 8 right now. They have a lot of guys returning, and I think that's the big thing. Offensively, they've got Ollie Gordon back, plus a lot of other guys back on offense and defense both. I would take them over, but I'm a little bit scared. They're always kind of a schizophrenic team week to week.
Yeah, it's going to be intriguing to see what they do out there. Sticking with, you know, an OG Big 12 team, Kansas State. Of all the returning Big 12 teams, they've got the most love. Just a hair behind Utah in the Big 12 preseason media poll. But they lose their quarterback, Will Howard. So, I don't know. I seem more concerned than most about Kansas State. I don't love the over on their win total. It's 9, 9.5, depending on where you shop. What do you think about it? Are you higher on the Wildcats than me?
Yeah, I actually am high on the Wildcats here. I love Klieman, the head coach. He always brings a physical brand of football. And I think that, eight returning starters on defense. They're going to be pretty good defensively. You talked about it. It's a weird situation at quarterback, right? Will Howard's gone. He might start for the team that wins the national championship this year in Ohio State. I mean, they're loaded. Will Howard goes there, and Kansas State says, yeah, go away, because we've got a guy named Avery Johnson who we really liked towards the end of last year and actually started him towards the end of last year. So with Avery Johnson, is he going to be the great quarterback that they think he is? Because they kind of told Will Howard take a hike, which is really weird. And now, like I said, ends up in Ohio State. So the Avery Johnson situation is interesting. He is a dynamic runner. And I think that mobility really fits what Klieman wants to do offensively. I also think K-State schedule-wise, most of their tough games are at home. Arizona, yeah. Oklahoma State, Kansas, all at home. They do have to go to Ames. So that'll be tough. But because of the schedule, I went K-State over 9.
Aaron, I think it's in the new Big 12 bylaws that I have to ask you a question about Colorado and Deion Sanders. What do you make of year two of Coach Prime? 5.5 is where this thing is set at. I have no idea of what to make of year two in Boulder.
You and me both. I totally stayed away from it. I mean, I could see a world where they're 6-6. I think that it would, which would put you over, which would cash the bet. So I mean, again, if I had to do it, I think I would take the over. This thing kind of started to be a disaster last year towards the end of that season, as everybody saw it unfold. They kind of got overhyped beating a TCU team early that wasn't all that good. But look, I think they'll be a little bit better. I think he's got the defensive and offensive lines a little bit better, which was just the huge, huge problem last year. They had the skill guys. They didn't have the guys up front. I expect a little bit of progression, but I was a little bit scared to bet it.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm looking at that schedule right now. That looks like a tougher schedule than Kansas State's. I wouldn't be shocked Colorado went 4-8 this year. Woo! When you look further down the Big 12 a little bit, there's a play with Central Florida. I don't know what to think of this team. I think I'm a little lower on them than most are. What are your thoughts on the Knights?
I'm with you. I'm low on them as well. Their total sits at 7.5. I went the under on Central Florida at 7.5. You know, guys, Gus Malzahn, I'm not a big believer in him, to be honest. When they hired him at Central Florida, I thought things would go pretty well. I think it's been pretty underwhelming so far for him. Now, I know last year they had to switch to the Big 12, and that is an adjustment without any doubt. However, the couple of years before, they really kind of went backwards as well, even when they were in the smaller conference. So it's kind of I'm not sure. They bring in KJ Jefferson at quarterback from Arkansas. I'm not sure he really progressed from the first year he started till now. I didn't really see it at Arkansas. They kind of went backwards. This schedule is really tough as well. They've got a non-conference game at Florida. I think that'll be tough for them. At TCU, at Iowa State, at West Virginia. They have Utah at home, but still, like I said, I'm high on Utah, so I think that'll be a tough game. They also host Arizona at home, and I'm high on Arizona as well. So the mixture of, I think, one of the toughest schedules in the Big 12. And the fact that I'm just not totally sold on the direction of the program, I think under 7.5 is the play for Central Florida.
Aaron, got about a minute to go. Let's do a little Game of Thrones, Battle of the Bastards. The worst three teams, at least with the win totals here in the conference. You got Arizona State at 4.5. It's juiced to the under. BYU 4.5, juiced to the under. And then Houston 3.5. You can get plus money, plus $1.35 if you want to go under 3.5. Out of those three, which under would you play?
I think Arizona State has to be the one. I think Houston, new coach, they're going to be better. BYU, it's tough to go out there and win. I think they'll win a couple games. Maybe they shouldn't. At home, Arizona State. I would have to go under 4.5. I'm the least confident, I think, in them. They've got in my opinion, a major rebuilding job there.
Forks down for Arizona State. Aaron, really appreciate you joining the program here in the Progressive Guest Line. Great breakdown of the Big 12. Can't wait to talk college football with you more.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Great stuff right there. So check him out again on X at @racing_dudes. Joe, when we come back, the big reveal.
Baby. I can't wait.
Our top five. Will there be any sports movies on our list?
Speaking Italian?
I hope so. That's next year in Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Check it out. Each and every day, VSiN.com, you get access to your best bets, betting splits, exclusive articles, odds by state. They vary by state. Betting tools, betting guides, they are there for you every single day. So before you make a single wager, be sure to check out VSiN.com. Dave Ross, Joe Cirillo here. And Joe, this is a very important segment because we're going to give our, it's kind of the holiday, right? It's the All-Star break. And Wyatt Tomczyk, our producer, said, hey, how about a list of your top, because you're a list guy.
I'm a big Cirillo top five guy. But this isn't just a Cirillo top five. It's not a Cirillo special. It's a Cirillo and Ross, or boom, Cirillo and Paluca.
There you go.
Top five. Paluca, Paluca. It could be a little foreshadowing there.
We wanted it to be fun. I was thinking about doing top five just miserable Mets moments, oh, but stop. I didn't want to do that to you guys. I mean,
Carlos Beltran still looking at strike three. Oh, by the way, God. Good pitch by Adam Wainwright. I'm not even mad at Beltran.
Still staring.
He's still looking at it.
I love Beltran. I'm not going to define, I mean, a Hall of Fame career by one moment.
Totally.
I think, by the way, should have been a first ballot Hall of Fame.
Oh, you know what? I agree with that. Absolutely.
Ooh, okay, I know we're talking about bad moments here, and we're going off topic, but David Wright's home run in the World Series, how special was that one?
Amazing.
That was incredible.
It's absolutely amazing. By the way, I mean, we should have beat the Yanks in 2000. I still get on Steve Phillips about that.
All those late game. Oh, my goodness.
Simo Perez, just run. Just run at second base. I mean, what are you doing?
I was sick, so I can't really tell you about that series.
So we've had some rough moments in our time. And plus the Yankees and, you know, Piazza off the bat, that game six, it looked like it was gone off Rivera. Bernie Williams catches it. See, state of elimination. All right, get off that. Let's get back.
My favorite player of all time there, Piazza, by the way.
Love Piazza.
Let's get back. Full graphic, too, for you. They got rid of the topic bar and everything.
Your top five movies of all time, sir. Now, again, I wonder if there's an Italian flair to it.
There's going to be a little bit of one, yeah, especially at the top of the list. For me, though, number five might get the most pushback because actual movie critics, and I'm not a movie critic. I just love movies.
Yeah.
Actual critics will say you can't have a comedy on a list of top movies. But I say when Wedding Crashers makes the list, you make an exception. Wedding Crashers comes in at number five for me. I mean, just so many great quotes. You know how many times I've turned to my buddy and called him a motorboat and son of a you-know-what?
But my
favorite was when I was taking my girl's first trip to New York about a year ago.
Okay.
First time she came to, you know, meet the family and everything. I played tour guide for a day in the city. And when you're going around New York City as a tourist, you have to see St. Patrick's Cathedral.
Oh, yes.
I mean, it's just one of the most beautiful landmarks out there. And we walk in and a wedding is actually going on.
You guys crashed a wedding.
So we crashed a wedding at St. Patrick's Cathedral. And then the maid of honor goes up to read and I turn to my girlfriend and I go, $20, First Corinthians. And it was First Corinthians. So Wedding Crashers, I know it's a comedy and real movie critics and movie snobs will get on me for that. Wedding Crashers, number five.
Fantastic.
Number four, I mentioned the foreshadowing. We talked about this movie a lot
this
the
movie.
Other day.
We
Pulp
love this
Fiction's
movie.
Number four
yeah.
all time. I've told a few people, you ain't my friend Paluca. In your case, Paluca. but it's just a very quotable movie. I may or may not have drunk ordered a Royale with cheese at McDonald's once in college. Pulp Fiction, I mean, Tarantino's self-insert. Maybe his best. We all know Quentin Tarantino likes to insert himself in his movies.
So good.
Was that his best role of any movie he put himself in?
He's amazing in that role, but I got to say, maybe my favorite scene is when they're at the bar. Hey, here, you're taking out Big Man's wife. I'm not taking out Big Man's wife. Hey, my name's Paul. That's between y'all. I mean, I've used that line for generations, and by the way, very close to making my list.
Yeah, I mean, Pulp Fiction's got to be there.
So
number
good.
Three. And I hate superhero movies, but this is so much deeper than a superhero movie. The Dark Knight is just a cinematic masterpiece. Christopher Nolan, who hates sequels, made this, some people forget it's a sequel, The Dark Knight.
That's right.
Heath Ledger's performance. I think Christian Bale actually a little underrated because Heath Ledger stole the show as Joker. But, I mean, just so many incredible performances in that movie. The special effects, the scene where Joker's walking away from the hospital as he blows it up.
Oh, it's amazing.
Yeah, The Dark Knight. I hate superhero movies. I've seen this so many times. I could watch it again every day.
You know what? None of those made my list either. And I'll tell you that is my favorite of the bunch, though. The Dark Knight.
Really? Yeah, of those movies I have.
No, of the superhero
movies.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think you nailed the best one.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, somebody who loves superhero movies, so you're really just putting the knife in my heart right now.
It made his list. He got one in the top five.
But I will say, The Dark Knight.
What are you, man? Endgame, Avengers isn't on there? I mean.
Civil War is amazing.
Not top five all time.
Cinematic masterpiece.
No chance, top five.
The Dark Knight, one of the best movies of all time.
There we go.
It is so good. I mean, Heath Ledger's performance was amazing. It's just such a shame that unfortunately he passed, because I felt like they could have had a couple movies down the line with that.
You got to pick one to go out on. That's the one.
That is the one. Heath was amazing. He deserved
it was
everything he got. He deserved it. Yeah.
Number two, Goodfellas. I mean, this was a staple, right? Before Netflix and streaming services, when you actually had to watch movies on TV with commercials sometime.
Right.
Every year, Christmas, watching Goodfellas on cable television. That Joe Pesci scene where they stop at his mom's for dinner with the dead body in the car in the middle of the night.
Have some pasta.
Ma, what do you mean settle down? I settle down with a nice girl every night. And then when he hits what happened to your car? Oh, we hit a deer. You know, the poor thing. The what do you call it? The paw got stuck in the ground.
The paw.
The Goodfellas is absolutely incredible. And then number one, and the way I sent this in, it says Godfather. This is a combo because for variety's sake, I didn't want to have one and two take up separate spots.
Okay.
Godfather 2 is actually my favorite movie of all time, but I put Godfather's 1 and 2 because Godfather 1 for me would be number 2 on this list.
Wait, say that again. Godfather 1 would be number 2 in the list.
And Godfather 2 would be number one, but I put them together.
Okay.
So I could have a little more variety on the list.
Where's Godfather number 3?
Still have it. I refuse to watch it because I don't want.
Oh, you've never watched it?
I refuse because I don't want it to ruin my view of the Godfather movies. I mean, Godfather, both of them, they're the best movies ever. I love the attention to detail, right? Like getting Luca Brasi's character to be he was a real life mobster. He wasn't an actor playing Luca Brasi.
Oh, really?
And all the actors on set were very uneasy around him because he was a real mobster.
Yeah, you get Hollywood guys, you get a real mobster doing
right.
it. Yeah.
And then, I mean, once you see Apollonia, I think every young man remembers the first time he saw Apollonia. I remember when Michael Corleone turns to his two bodyguards and says, più greca che italiana. I mean, perfect description, but The Godfather's 1 and 2, just the best.
That is amazing Italian, by the way. And I like the fact that you basically have two gangster movies for 2 and 1.
Yeah.
You got a comedy in there. Pulp Fiction is such a dark comedy that people don't get. There's so much humor throughout Pulp Fiction. And The Dark Knight does have some comedic scenes to it, even for
dark,
a very dark. Absolutely.
All right, Joe, I've seen 2.5 of those movies on your list.
You have not seen all those?
I've not seen Pulp Fiction, Wedding Crashers, Godfather. I've seen all the YouTube clips. I've never sat down.
Okay.
I know what happened.
So now you have a list that you have to go complete.
Yes, I will. Godfather will be on. I got to watch that.
Now, I think with me and Joe, we're showing my age a little bit from my top 5. But, you know, I would have easily had.
Don't tell me Casablanca's on there.
No. But number 5, and here's the crazy thing. I still haven't seen Top Gun Maverick. You know why? Because Top Gun was so damn good, the original in 1986. And I always give Brian Ortega, one of our fine producers on the network, I always give him a hard time about Hollywood, what they like versus what we like.
Right.
This should have been Best Picture in 1986. That's how good Top Gun was. I met Tom Cruise in Detroit before a football game. We were hanging out together. And people were like, do you guys know each other? And I'm like, no. He's like, I thought you guys were you were a stunt double in his movie. I could have been. I'm taller than
Tom
Cruise.
You're taller. Yeah,
I am
exactly.
taller than Tom Cruise. It's an absolute. Classic 1986. Okay, Wyatt, how did you get your name?
The great movie Tombstone.
You go. Wyatt, heard of you. You must be the fastest gun in the West. So Tombstone is my favorite Western of all time. It's not so much for Kurt Russell's character, but it is for Val Kilmer's, who played Wyatt Earp. Kurt Russell played Wyatt Earp. It's Doc Holliday that was just an amazing performance by Val Kilmer. The best Western I've ever seen in my life, and I'm not even a big Western guy. Number 3 is my favorite gangster movie of all time, In Chicago. You want to know how you get Capone? He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, he sends one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way. And that's how you get Capone. So I think it's a Brian De Palma. It's just an amazing film. Kevin Costner in his heyday. And I would say this, Robert De Niro, I thought as Capone, was absolutely master. I mean, De Niro's De Niro.
He doesn't miss.
So he's not going to miss. He was fantastic as Al Capone. Kind of like what you did with Godfather. That's what I did with Rocky and Rocky III. Rocky won Best Picture in 1976, and it's an amazing movie. It's not even a movie about boxing. It's more about a love story with Adrian.
Yeah.
Rocky III is even better because it introduced us to Mr. T as Clubber Lang. And by the way, Hulk Hogan as Thunderlips, the ultimate male versus the ultimate meatball, maybe one of the greatest scenes ever. And by the way, he wasn't even a massive star yet, Hulk Hogan playing Thunderlips.
Fun fact, Hogan got fired from the WWF at the time, the first
to do this movie. Yep. He made the right decision. And then Karate Kid, it is not a movie about karate. It's a movie about life. You learn so much about Ralph Macchio. You're moving from Jersey to California. You're learning karate. You're not accepted. Nobody likes you. And you figure out a way to make it in a new town, a new city, and a new state. And Ralph Macchio and Pat Morita, their chemistry, I tear up every time. The best friend I ever had. You pretty okay too. Karate Kid, my number one movie of all time.
That's a great list, man. I got a little homework. The Untouchables, I got to see.
You'll love it.
Yeah.
Great week, my friend.
Always. Appreciate it. Let's do it again.
Thanks to Wyatt. Cash them tickets. We'll see you next time here on Sharp Money.